Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything. Everything. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. On demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked.
Broadcasting live from Bashan Radio, Spotify, iTunes, and iHeartRadio, live from New York City. This is the Linda Monroe Show, and I am Linda Monroe. If you want to know more about me and what I do, go to thelindamonroe.com. Today I have an awesome opportunity of interviewing Evan Lucas. Nicknamed the Country Boy. This is the brother of Frank Lucas, the American Gangster. How are you doing this afternoon, Mr. Lucas?
I'm fine. What about yourself?
I am great. Now, Mr. Lucas, let me tell you a little bit about him. He was born in Greene County, North Carolina in 1950. He's the youngest of 11 siblings. His parents were sharecroppers in the Jim Crow South. They had nothing. He learned at a young age that education would need to take a back seat to survival. So he worked in the fields helping his parents mostly and went to school when he could. So when he got grown, he moved to New Jersey. So Mr. Lucas, tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
Excuse me, say that again.
Can you tell us a little bit about your life story and what you do and what has been the lowest point of your life and how did it get you to where you are today?
Well, my life story starts off with me coming this way and getting into the drug game. When I first came here, I started out as I had a little street game called the Junior Executions. I started with the Senior Executions, but I just couldn't seem to take orders, so I started my own gang, which was the Junior Executions, 300 members. And I was just doing a lot of petty stuff, assaults and bugging and kind of crazy mess, snatching pocketbooks back then, were popular back then, and stuff like that. I went to jail so much that my mother and father said, well, all I had to do was come down to youth house at the time because I was a teenager, and signed me out. So I went so much and said, well, we're not signing you out no more. So my brother Frank came over and signed me out and took me back with him. And I was up in small paradise over in New York. I see all these guys coming in there with jewelry and big cars and money. I said, you know what, this is for me. So we started out, but it's much deeper than that, but we started out in Newark. You know, me and my brother Shorty, brother Huvon and Levon, they were twins, and my nephew Pop Lassiter, he was here. He wasn't in the South with us. He was here, but when we got here, he'd been with us the whole while. And he's definitely the one that played T.I. in the movie. T.I. played him in the movie. He was the one that was the ball player. Anyway, we started out. So we started out doing what we were doing, and things just started clicking along. Next thing you know, we were doing sort of all right. So we need a supplier, so we need somebody to supply us. So we talked to my brother Frank. He really didn't want us in the drug trade. So we had to do some. We had to see some other people at that time, at a particular time. So when the money at the time over here, we have a little. We had a lot of stuff going on in Newark. Oh, in Newark over here, we was at Port Newark, where one of the biggest ports in the world. So you know, you had a lot of shipment coming out of Port Newark. So we were stripped for cash. We need maybe 75,000, 80,000. I can tell you now because the statute of limitations ran out. Need 75,000, 80,000. We go down that project. I mean, truck jack, probably a truck coming out with mink coats, a load of mink coats, stuff like that. Sell a whole truck, hoaxing off for like $100,000. That'll be our drug money. Go over there and purchase drugs for some of the mafia's carriers over there. So how we really got on, because we had built a family is so huge, it was a shame. But how we didn't have enough to supply him with. But how we really got on to my Uncle Ike, was over in Thailand, and he had this club over there. And he had this this general over there. He had like a 20,000 man army over there. And they had like poppy fields, like cotton plantations. They would have poppy fields full, as you could see, and they would take it out. They would take it and they would process it up in the mountains. So our stuff was coming straight from the processing, straight through the streets of New York. Nobody could match up with us. Not in the mafia. Nobody could match up with us. So wherever we put our stuff at, whatever neighborhood we put it in, nobody could match up with it. Nobody. So we were taking money out of everybody's pockets, you know. So we had a lot of people. We made a lot of enemies because we were taking money out of everybody's pockets. There wasn't nobody that particular time was going to mess with us. So, and looking back on things, it was a lot of money made, a lot of money. But it was all for nothing really because they came in, they confiscated. They even went to Cayman Islands and they had the key of the house. And they were smart enough to take their key over there to Cayman Islands. And they hit a big deposit box over there, $52 million. So they just ripped us up all the money. All they didn't steal, they confiscated anything that you had. They took it because they said you bought it with your own money. You know what I'm saying? It took everything. But, you know, I'm just glad to be here with my life. I'm just glad to be here. I'm grateful because even though I was doing wrong, I know God was out there with me. Because if God wasn't with me, I wouldn't be here talking now. But to all the young fellas out there doing something now, that's crazy. You could never repeat what we did. Never. Never, you can never do that. The only thing you can do now is just to go to school, get a good education, and go from there. Because you get to the streets, and where is that? You're going to end up in the penitentiary, or you're going to end up in your grave. Can't happen. We got to the point to where we was at. I guess you could say it might have been luck. We probably know a lot about what we were doing, too, because we had a chance to watch all the guys, all the old timers. Even had a chance to, like, really, like, watch Bubby Johnson. So it was a certain time in Harlem that, you know, you didn't do nothing in Harlem unless you checked in with Bubby Johnson. There wasn't no Nicky Barnes or Frank Lucas or none of that. You know, anybody that were working there, you were working on Bubby Johnson. So I was a teenager. I was watching all this year, so I got a chance to really watch a movie. So as we were coming up, when we got a chance to watch a movie, me and my brother and my nephew, we got a chance to watch. So when we were coming up, we was applying what we knew, how to move and how to do. That's how we got through a lot of stuff. You know what I'm saying? But a guy coming up, and they had an opportunity to be right there and see hands-on with these guys, I don't see how you're going to make it. I know. I just don't. Things just clicked and worked out for us, but I'm grateful. I'm grateful to be here.
Okay, one thing I wanted to know is how you come from the Jim Crow South and go straight to the North and get hooked up with the mafia to making a million dollars a day.
Well, the mafia hookup was like a connect. Anybody got connected, to connect, everybody knows that connect is golden. So anybody got to connect, you know, that's where your money is going to make your money at. So we were buying stuff out of New York, but the stuff that we were buying, you know, we were buying too much to buy, like, little scrambled stuff, so we had to buy weight. So we found a mafia connect to a guy named Winston out of New York. So then we found out from another little connect over there, Newark, little mafia connect. So we were buying it from them, but as what really got us to that $1 million a day standards was the product coming out of Thailand, Bangkok. It was 98% pure. Nobody could match up with it. So I take one key of that stuff, make three keys out of it. And I'm getting like 25,000 quarters out of each key. So say I only paying like $4,000 a key. Nobody can match up with it. If you're getting it from an Italian guy, most you're gonna get for 5%, 6%. You know what I'm saying? I put mine on the street almost 10%. You can't match up. So whatever neighborhood mine's in, we're gonna take all the money. No question about it. They're gonna buy the best drugs. People don't buy drugs because they like it, they buy drugs because who got the best product on the street. We had the best on the street and we was able to do that because a lot of times when people come and buy 1,000 quarters, with 1,000 quarters it was like 50,000 really. $50,000. $1,000 on the streets of New York back in the 70s, back in 74, 75. You do good. It's the last 20 minutes. Gone. that was just there in the streets. You got people coming in from, like I said, from Louisiana, flying off from Connecticut, they flying in. And you got people taking care of these people. Easy.
Okay, now, you said you had a major drug syndicate that consisted of hundreds of members. I mean, how did you promote to get all these people to come work under your organization?
Well, there were five of us. There were like five. There were five of us. There was my brother Shorty, my brother Hugh Vaughn, my brother Lee Vaughn, my brother Larry, and there were also like six of us, my nephew Pop. So all of us got friends, you know, this and that. So everybody had their own crew. So it was like you got six bosses, you know, so you got like six different families. You know what I'm saying? We're all working on one umbrella. They're like six different families. You feel what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So if I mess around there, if my team, I got maybe a 75-member team. If my team come in and bring in $200,000 a day, which is easy, right? And another team come in and bring in $200,000 a day. And you got six people come in and bring that money, and that was easy. $200,000 a day was nothing to bring in.
Wow. So how long did it take for the fans? Did you get busted by the state of Jersey?
What happened is, we had every police agent in the country watching us. Now what happened is, Mr. Robinson and them over here, they was like a task force. That's the one that the original Rough Control portrayed. They were like a task force. So, and back in the day, if we leave Newark and go to Elizabeth, which was like maybe a mile away, you know, to the next town, they couldn't come over there because, you know, it was out of their jurisdiction. You know what I'm saying? So they got so caught up, so they created this BON, Bureau of Narcotics. So they can do something like a federal thing then, because they would end up down south, where we were at down south in the hotels. They would end up, we go to Cayman Islands, they would end up over there, following us, right, come around along with us on vacation the whole time. So that's how they created that BON. So, wait, hold on for a minute. Yeah, so, you know, and if they Malone, wait, I don't know what's wrong with. State, will please repeat your question again. I just had somebody interrupt me. Hello?
Yes.
So they created this agent called BON. And not only BON, but we had every federal agent in the country on us. So we had, like, in New York, we had Sterling Johnson, which is, he's a federal judge now. He had the Special Narcotics Court. They were federal. They were fierce. And we had a lot of people on us, baby. But Richard Robinson, they rushed in and got the case. And they rushed in on the case because I knew the case was kind of weak. But they did bust a friend of mine with the $50 million in street value and inheritance, but the case still was weak, so we had to end up copping out.
Okay, so when you said you had to end up copping, you think you took a plea bargain?
Yes. No
okay.
The deal was, he had indicted my mother and father there because we didn't even go to trial. My brother Shorty and his wife went to trial anyway. And he went to trial, and he got in up with 37 years. But he told us that what you do is we'll dismiss the case against your mother and father as Larry, Levar, and me, and I cop out. I'm like, what do you mean we dismiss the case? You know they didn't have anything to do with it anyway. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean, when y'all came for Al Capone, you didn't mess their mother. You know what I'm saying? You know they didn't have nothing to do with it. Me, us? Yeah, we, yeah. But you know they didn't have no lobby. So they say we had contracts on him and the judge and all that, which, you know, I mean, I don't know. But anyway, we had to end up copping out to get my mother and father up and out of there because the way things were going, they were getting rid of railroad straight up. You already know that. And with the appeal thing come, when the appeal could come up, we would have to settle while for on the appeal. Meanwhile, my mother and father would have to sit too. And they never did nothing. They never knew But they didn't bring, they didn't know nothing about no drug. You said drugs on the table in front of them, now they think it's got a sack of flour or something. Didn't know nothing about it.
Nothing.
You know what I'm saying? But just the way they come after us, they came after us.
So how did they try to tie your parents in it?
The way we got, years later, Richard Roberts told us that the guy that had flipped on us told him that if you indict their mother and father, you'll get a conviction out of there.
Oh.
Cause we were, in other words, we were going to trial. We got 27, we got 35 defendants. And we got 27 lawyers. We got the best lawyers in the country in one courtroom. Richard Roberts is an inexperienced prosecutor at the time. We knew that. You know what I'm saying? Ain't no way in the world he's going to beat us in trial. But the guy that got busted with the $50 million, that's a friend of mine. You know, he's sitting there. He get ready to testify. He's going to testify if we go to trial, but we're going to break him down in court. But but we couldn't go to trial because my mother and father is the only thing stopping us before the trial. I'm kind of glad we didn't either because we just got smashed up in there, but we would have went. If it don't be for my mother and father, we would have went. I'd have took their chance. I couldn't take a chance with them.
So you ended up spending 5 years in prison. And
I did 30 some months. Yeah, it was the deal. I did 30 some months in Jersey. I did another 20 some months upstate New York. I was unindicted co-defendant in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Connecticut. They left me as an unindicted co-defendant there because they figured New York and Jersey were going to, they're going to finish me. You know, because I'm looking at life with no possible chance in New York because they've been extended in the federal court if I don't cop out. I'm looking at 30, 37 and Newark. Why bring me or transfer me down back and forth? I guess that's how they were thinking. Anyway, they just left me on an unindicted co-defendant. And everything went down. I got 5 years in Jersey, 5 years in New York. Running concurrent, but not retroactive concurrent. It was the overlapping time. So it was like 18 months difference. So I had to go to New York and do the rest of the time until my CRD came up. My CRD came up and signed myself and walked out of prison.
So now when you got back out of prison.
The whole thing in New York, here you get a CRD. A CRD, you signed to condition release in New York. Because in Jersey, with a 5 year sentence, you do 42 months, you max out. In New York, you do 42 months, you sign to the CRD, which is the condition release. Condition that you will do the remainder of the time on parole. See, they doing that because federal courts hadn't ruled on it yet. So what I did, I got an injunction against their parole. Technically, I'm on parole, but I have to report to parole officer, and the parole officer won't be able to come to my house because I got an injunction against them. And if I live out that time that they say that I owe them, without getting into trouble, but then it just go away. But if I get violated, then New York will take me back upstate, maybe do time before that time run out. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay.
So, but you came out of prison, and you started back into the drug scene? All of y'all
when I left prison?
I said all of your brothers, when y'all came back out of prison, y'all all got back into the drug trade?
Yes, sort of, like, but not really deep because they had too many eyes on us, you know what I'm saying? Not really. Yeah, a little bit here and there, but nothing really. I say, you could say yeah, then I say no because of what we used to do and what we were doing then. Really was nothing.
Okay. So what... What was the turning point that made you just say, enough is enough? I cannot stay in this type of lifestyle and stay alive.
I know because I've seen people getting put away. I was very fortunate. I've seen people getting put away for crazy times, for a little of nothing. I'm up. When I first went to the problem, I'm like, man, they got me up here. You know what I'm saying? But My close associate, my very close associate, as a matter of fact, they were he and his brother, them stuff, he had got busted with $50 million in Harriet. He got busted with $50 million in Harriet. He got his eyes at the end of right now, you're looking at $50 million in Harriet. So I'm in jail with 5 years talking about, man, they just did me wrong. And here comes a guy come up in there with 2 bags of Harrier. He got a 5 with a 7. I'm like, what? I said, I better shut up and be cool. Then I see all these kids coming up in here, man, for drug charges, man. They were wiping them out. You know what I'm saying? That's for drug charges. But no murders. They were wiping them out. 25 years and all kind of crazy. I'm like, what? They would get more time out for drugs than they do for somebody who go out there and murder somebody.
Yeah.
You murder somebody, you'll get life. You get 30 years, you can come home. You get caught with a kilo of drugs, you get life with no possible chance of parole. That's crazy.
And I definitely agree with that. You know, with the federal penitentiary, you got that minimum maximum 25. You going 25 straight up.
They hitting you up. It's not even worth it. Then sooner or later, if you try to do stuff like that, you just there's no way you're gonna do that now. There ain't no way you can do that right now. I can't see anybody doing it right now. I can't see it. If you do, you're going straight to the penitentiary. Straight up.
Okay, so once you got back out on the street, and you were back to prison how many times since then?
Say that again?
I said, once you got out the first time, did you ever go back into prison?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so how many times did you go back?
I went back about at least 4 times. I was just hard-headed. I went back these 4 times.
And were they all on drug charges?
Drugs. All my cases of drugs.
Okay.
All my cases of drugs.
I just interviewed a guy last week. I think I was telling you. He was pulled off the street for selling drugs, but he went into the North Carolina prison system and created a criminal enterprise where he had the head people in Raleigh, North Carolina, bringing him drugs in there. And then I don't know what really happened, but they turned on him, and he was facing 245 years to life. Wow. Life in the federal
penitentiary. Of course they're going to tell you. How we was able to stop a lot of television, because I guess people, they were saying that we were kind of vicious coming up, you know, which we probably was, you know what I'm saying? But mostly is we had family members. Mostly I was like my brothers and cousins and stuff like that. We came up, we were back there in North Carolina together, you know, walking down the road and running from the Klans and stuff. They shooting us running through the fields and stuff. So we came up together. We were real close knit. No way we were gonna tell on each other. You know, no way. You know, they used to go ahead and kill us. You know, we're not telling on each other. You know what I'm saying? That got us a long way. You know what I'm saying? That got us a long way. But now they ain't got no more than I did. They ain't no more. Ain't no loyalty. But we were blood. So we won't tell it. You would have to kill me. I'm not telling you. I'm not gonna do it. I'm just not doing it. You know what I'm saying? But hey.
Well, I guess y'all have enough money to hire the best attorneys in the North and keep you from getting too much time back in the day.
Absolutely. Then, we had the money for them attorneys also, too. You know what I'm saying? That stopped a lot of stuff. And believe me, they the dirtiest. These jokers about, we don't take this, we won't take that. Man, you offer some jokers some money and, you know, things change. It'll change in a heartbeat. And they'll tell you, well, look, you know, we can't, we'll take this amount right here, but you got to do time. You got to do time. Because if you don't do time, they don't look right for us. You got to do time. And I'm telling you what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? And they'll take that money, but you come home. But you know, God bless you if you got that money. And all the money that you got left, you probably end up getting it to them. All they ain't stole, and all the feds and all of them, they ain't confiscated. They confiscated a lot of stuff.
Oh, wow. And so,
Once they confiscated your stuff, did it leave you broke coming out of prison? Yes. Yes. Coming out, it wasn't no problem because, you know, with the things that were going on, we still had people in the streets that were looking out. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't no problem coming out. We would be able to pay rent to be able to eat and get a car or something, you know, but, you know, the millions long gone.
Okay. So that got you to the point where you found out that family value and life was more important than the million dollars of that.
Yes. I think right now, my family and got the wife that I had back then. You know, thank God she stuck with me. I got my grandkids, which I take to school every day. You know, now I just walk around. I thank God for having a life. I'm in pretty good health. So I'm just grateful because I know for a fact I got people that were hooked up with us. They still in jail. They've been in jail since 1977. They're still in jail. And they were like working for me. They kept their mouth shut. They're still there. I mean, they're rotting in jail, man. So I'm thankful, grateful. I'm grateful. There's no way. If I had a truckload of stuff right now, I wouldn't touch it. No way.
I don't know. No. Well, I think everything's trickled down here to the south of retail. It's running rapid down here in the south. I mean, these kids are dropping like flies with this drug scene, and it's just a sad situation.
Yeah, I know. I got nephews and stuff down there. I got nephews all over, you know. I know. I be talking to them all the time. It's crazy. I've been out in Wilson, North Carolina at least twice, sometimes three times a year. I got a lot of nephews and stuff down there. They running around crazy, you know. They good, you know, but they good. Half of them have started working now, so they pretty good.
Okay, well, can you give us a few nuggets to the guys in the drug scene right now? Could you just drop them a few nuggets as to how they need to get out of that lifestyle and use those skills to be a positive influence, and they can make millions that way.
Yes, because if you're out there in the drug game, you already know. I don't got to tell you nothing. You already know how this thing going. You know what I'm saying? Sooner or later, you're going to make police gonna make 1,000 mistakes. All they gotta do is get there one time. They don't make a mistake and get you. You're done. You already know that. So I'm saying, so why continue doing what you're doing? A little money you got right now, you need to put that, invest that into something legit, and step away from that drug game because you're gonna go to jail. You're gonna get killed. One of the two, jail or get killed. You know what I'm saying? It's on you. You already know. I don't have to tell you. You already know. When you out there in the streets, you know. You already know. So, but God bless you. Whatever way you decide to go, God bless you. But if I were you, whatever money I got, I'd put it into some legit stuff. If I had $30,000 for a car, I'd buy me a store or something. I'd do something with it. Before I buy a car here, then I put in something legit. Something. You know what I'm saying? Go from there.
Okay, now did you go out in Jersey and talk to the youth of Jersey about your lifestyle and
hello?
Yes. Do you go out in the streets and talk to those guys on the street to try to turn them into a positive lifestyle?
Yes, I've been in Newark sometimes three times a week. Yes, I do. I used to go, me and Frank used to go around. We used to went down to Columbus University when we were down there. We talked to some people down there. We went to the high schools in the Bronx. We talked to them. We went to a few schools in Newark. We talked to them. We were going a little bit of every place. We were going a lot of places talking to kids and telling them you can't, it's impossible to do what we did. It's impossible to do that. You can't do that. That was back then. Times, days have changed now. You can't do that now. You can't do that. You can't do it. Just like you can't raise your kids the way... I can't raise my kids the way I was raised. I can't
raise
because the world don't exist no more. You know what I'm saying? I had to raise them different now. I had to do the best I can with them.
Exactly.
I can't raise them like I was raised. Can't do it. That world don't exist no more. And that $1 million a day, that $200,000 or $300,000, they ain't existing no more neither, because they ain't nothing but a trap on right now. 90% of the people in the street, even in your circle, they're gonna tell it. If they ain't telling it already, they're gonna tell it.
Yeah, that's definitely a fact. I mean, prison is a big business, and that's another way of stopping the population growth, I feel.
It is. But when kids are young and you get out there, you get go to making that kind of money, a lot of stuff you don't see that you see when you get older. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of stuff that I was doing, I didn't see. Because things were coming real fast. I didn't see the destruction that I was causing until I got, like, older. You know, then I'm like, oh, my God. You know what I'm saying? That's a whole praying. It's a whole asking God to forgive me, because it was a lot of hurt and harm caused there. You know what I'm saying? It was a lot of tragedies on my end, too. It was all glitter. It was a lot of tragedies on my end, too. You know what I'm saying? Okay. I was the cause of it. You know what I'm saying? But I thank God. But God didn't let me die there, did he? You know what I'm saying? And God is real. God is real.
God, yes, he is.
God wasn't real. I wouldn't be here talking now.
Well, if any of the little drug dealers and guys want to get in contact with you, give us your social media information.
Okay, excuse me, say that again now.
Do you have anything on social media that my listeners might want to get in contact with you to maybe speak to their youth or anything?
I have a Facebook page on social media, but I don't be doing anything. I got a Facebook page on social media. Send me a friend request.
All right. Well, Mr. Lucas, it has been an honor speaking with you, and I hope my listeners have been blessed by our interview today. And you're one of the ones, and your brothers, I mean, you must have had a praying mother and a praying grandmother. Because all of y'all survived without even being killed. Even in prison, you survived prison.
Yes. Yes. They were standing in the gap. They were standing in the gap for us. Yes, they were.
Well, I do want to take the opportunity to thank you for taking out of your busy schedule to do this interview with me today. And I am broadcasting from Bashani Radio, Spotify, iHeart, and iTunes Radio, live from New York City. This is the Linda Monroe Show, and I am Linda Monroe. If you want to know more about me and what I do, go to lindamonroe.com. And I also want to thank all my listeners, and I hope these calls are being a blessing to change your life. Again, Mr. Lucas, Mr. Country Boy, I want to thank you so much for taking us time to interview with me today.
Thank you for having me.
You be blessed.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything. Everything. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. On demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked.